Tell me your story.
Tell me your story.
How did it all start? Do you remember?
Oh, now what happened?
How did it stop?
You're now tuned into the Small Business Origins Podcast.
I love an origin story.
Each week, we dive into the real stories of entrepreneurs and businesses from across the nation.
Who is he and what's his origin story?
Who started with just an idea and are now making waves.
I told you this was a good idea.
This is Small Business Origins.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Small Business Origins. You're tuned in to our nationwide search for entrepreneurs that have a story to tell. And joining us virtually in the studio, all the way from Phoenix, Arizona, we have Bullseye. He's with Bullseye the Clown. Bullseye, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It is a pleasure. This is one of the most unique recordings of this podcast I've gotten to do. I can't wait to hop into it because it's just such a cool story from what I've seen so far. And I can't wait to hear the full real story. But before we get started, we always start out with an icebreaker question. And today's icebreaker question is, when you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, actually, what I wanted to be when I grew up, I grew up with country music, listening to country music a lot. And so I watched stuff like, you know, the Dolly Parton show and the Barbara Mandrell show. So I always wanted to be like this wonderful singer and dancer. The only problem was I couldn't sing and I couldn't dance. So, but I had this in my head that that's what I wanted to do. And when I took up choir, I realized, oh, quickly, I couldn't sing. So I figured I had to pivot. So at that point, it was kind of like, okay, let me kind of change that idea from being a singer and a dancer to maybe an actor. So that was kind of it.
Yeah, man, I definitely had aspirations when I was younger. That's what I wanted to do as well, was like be an actor, famous, you know, maybe do singing, that kind of thing. I think when I was, you know, very first, I always think of like the first thing that I knew I wanted to be when I grew up. And that was our first grade class. We had this like assignment, if you will, that came from the teacher, and it was to take this little cutout and then decorate that cutout as the thing that you want to be when you get older, you know. And of course, I think it's pretty usual for children when they're growing up to want to be a police officer when they get older, but I had all of my family that was cops, so it was just something where I was like, I want to follow in their footsteps and do the same thing. And then in reality, once I got out of high school and graduated, figured out, you know what, being a cop is not my thing, and wound up in fire and EMS instead.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And then, of course, as fate would have it, you know, I've done so many different jobs. And then one of them that I moved into was marketing, and marketing gave me this awesome opportunity of podcasting, which kind of reminds me of performing, if you will. So it really gives me kind of that fix I was looking for, being able to talk, people are listening to it, you know, you have an audience, and then I get to meet awesome people like you and hear all of these stories from business owners everywhere.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story.
Well, we are here to talk about you though. So let's hop into that origin story. Where'd you come from and how'd you get into what you're into right now?
Well, actually, I lived in Ohio my whole life up until I moved to Arizona. So when I lived in Ohio, I went to Ashland University. I was a theater major, and then my secondary major was communications. And my first job right out of college, I was hired by the Mr. Wizard Company to travel around to elementary schools and junior high schools to do a science program as Mr. Wizard's assistant. So, which was amazing because I hated science. And so I could just pretend like I knew what I was doing, which was good. And then, of course, as I mentioned, I thought that I was going to be this wonderful actor and I was going to be the next Robin Williams or something on your TV screens and your movie screens. And that didn't happen. And so when that didn't happen, a friend suggested, why don't you try stand-up comedy? You're funny, so you should be a comedian. And I didn't know the first thing about stand-up comedy. So I happened to be in a mall in Nashville, and I saw a book called Stand-Up Comedy, the book, written by Judy Carter. And it was like how to write a stand-up act and then what to do once you got it. And there was a listing of comedy clubs in the back. And so as I started filling out the book, I kind of thought, you know what? I've never heard of this woman. I don't even know if she's funny. So I decided to, there was a number in the back of the book. I called up the number and I said, you know, I was wanting to know if this woman is going to be traveling to Ohio anytime, because I'm not sure if she's even funny. And the lady on the other end said, "Yes, I'm funny." And as a matter of fact, I'm coming to Ohio and you will be my opening act. Just do the exercises in the book and we'll see how it goes. So that's kind of how I broke into stand-up comedy. I basically went from not knowing what I'm doing to becoming an opening act for Judy Carter, who wrote the book. First night was terrible. So we went back to the hotel and we reworked all the jokes. Second night was a little better. Third night was the best. And that's kind of how it all started. So I did that for 10 years. And then ironically, even though I was in a field called stand-up comedy, I wasn't having any fun doing that. So after 10 years, I quit off and on throughout that 10 years. You know, every time I had a bad show, I quit and I would retire for 1 to 2 weeks. and then I would start it back up again. And so finally, after about 10 years, my mom moved to Arizona. So I decided to move to Arizona and I stopped doing comedy and I just kind of got that typical 9-to-5 job. And then in 2018, my father passed away. And so my dad was never a traveler, never left the state of Ohio. And so when he passed away, I wanted to do something to honor him. And since he never traveled, I thought maybe I should travel just to do something. And years ago, I saw a movie called Patch Adams, starring Robin Williams. And I found out that Patch Adams is a real medical doctor who believes most people can be cured more through human connection than through pills and medication. And he was a clown who happened to be a doctor. And he traveled and did clown tours all over the United States. So I went to his website and saw that he was doing a clown tour to Russia. And just on a whim, I booked myself on this Russian clown tour. And within a week or two, I found myself in Russia, in the middle of Russia, with Patch Adams and 35 clowns. And we were going into children's hospitals and orphanages and hospices, drug rehab centers, and we were just clowning with people. I had no clue what I was doing because I had never really been a clown before. It was a lot different than stand-up comedy. And so it was like a 14-day crash course in clowning. We were there for 14 days. We went to Moscow for 7 days, and then we went to St. Petersburg for 7 days. And we were in costume 24/7. We never got out of our costumes. Granted, we were in different costumes each day. It wasn't the same smelly one. and I really never thought I would clown after that. I thought this was just a one-off kind of thing. But when we were there, I saw the power that we had as clowns and some of the most amazing interactions that we had. And so when I came home, I just thought, you know what? I need to figure out a way to do this. My thing was I grew up bullied, and so I always felt very isolated a lot of the times. And so that was kind of my mission whenever I was in Russia, is every time we went to a facility or an orphanage, I would find someone who looked like they were isolated. They were sitting off from the rest of the group. And so that kind of became my mission, is finding people who I felt isolated once I got back. So I really started doing clowning for senior living communities. So I went into senior living communities, people who were put in nursing homes, and some of them might feel isolated. But I started by just doing like a fitness class called Clown Fitness. And I went in with balloons and we did workouts with the residents. And then one thing kind of led to another and it just kind of kept morphing from there. So that's kind of how Bullseye the Clown came to be.
Yeah. Totally kind of like a little accident type thing.
Yes, you know? You told me
coming out of stand-up comedy into clowning.
Yeah, so you told me that 10 years ago that at 50 years old I would become a clown, I would have told you were crazy. So that was not exactly the career path that I saw for myself.
So what year was that you went to Russia?
2018. So it really wasn't that long ago. It seems like almost a lifetime ago, but it really wasn't that long ago. And then
it's amazing how recent that is.
Yeah, and then since Russia, last year I went to Morocco again with Patch Adams. And then I just got back on Sunday from Mexico City. We went to Mexico City with another group of clowns.
It's such an amazing way to be able to reach out to people and kind of break the ice, because I imagine that people that you're dealing with typically aren't ones that just want to be approached by anybody, especially if they are sick or injured, something like that. And so I feel like this just kind of opens the door for people to be able to open up to you a little bit more, even if it is serious what you're talking about.
Right. And, you know, and part of the problem that I ran into, especially like in Russia and even in actually everywhere we've gone, is that I only speak English. And a lot of the places we go, they only speak their language. And so it really just comes down to physicality and, you know, just having interactions. And some of the places we go, the children might come up to you and you just simply hug them. And that's all you do. That's what they want. That's what they feel like they need. But you figure out quickly how to interact with them. I can tell you a couple stories of some of the things that happened. If you want to hear those, I don't know what all you are wanting to hear on this podcast, but
heck yeah, why not, man? We're here.
I suppose like the smallest, like the list, it seems like it's such a small thing, but on the very first tour, what really made me want to continue doing this was we were on the bus and we were going to an orphanage in the middle of Russia. And we happened to stop at a stoplight and there was a woman standing at the bus stop. And she was holding a bag of groceries. She was an older woman. And even though there were like 20 people at the bus stop, I could see that she was alone. Nobody was paying attention to her. She wasn't interacting with anyone. And so I just kind of pecked on the window and she looked up and I can't imagine what she thought when she saw like a bus full of 35 clowns. But I just started to wave at her and she slowly like looked at me really funny and she started to wave. And then I waved a little faster and she waved a little faster. And then all of the clowns on the bus noticed what I was doing and they all turned and looked at the woman and they all started to wave. And then as the light changed and the bus pulled away, the woman sat down on the bench and she started to cry. Why she was crying, I don't know. Maybe she felt seen for that particular moment. Maybe she was just glad we didn't kidnap her. I don't know what it was. An interaction that took maybe 2 minutes. And I wasn't even like physically right there beside this particular person. I saw the impact that we had, and then kind of impact that, you know, clowns had on people. And so it was like, that is something I knew that I wanted to bring back to the United States with me and continue to do while I was here.
So I feel like it, I don't know, just not even having been there, just hearing the story, it seems like it kind of goes with one of the big things I know you're against, which is bullying. Right. You know, I know that has been a message you've kind of been pushing out. And so maybe like you said, it is just she felt at that moment that someone actually cared enough to see her.
Right.
You know, in a world where she may be moving around unseen, she felt like she was seen. And I think that's amazing. So how does your bullying mantra kind of come into this as far as what you're doing against bullying? And then what is it that you actually do for a living? Like, how do you make money doing this?
So how the bully, I really never wanted to be the poster child for bullying, you know? But I honestly feel like what held me back from ever becoming an actor or from really taking off and stand up was the fact that I was bullied because I didn't have any confidence in myself at all. So basically when things got tough, I got going kind of thing. That's kind of what the mentality was that I had kind of put, in my own head, you know, from being bullied years ago. So I never wanted to be that poster child for, you know, the bullied kid. But then when I got back from Russia, I really sat down and started thinking about, you know what? I have a platform as the clown that I can use for bullying as well. So that's where my book came in. I wrote a book called Bullseye on Bullying. And I just decided to kind of own that. And originally, it wasn't even going to be a book for kids. It really was. There are a lot of adults who were bullied as kids who never became what they wanted to become. And so that was really the target market that I really wanted to reach was, where do I find these people who are bullied and are still working at McDonald's, even though they've got the brains to work at a corporation, but they just never did it because of the way they were treated and bullied, and they no longer have confidence in themselves. That are the people that I really wanted to reach to begin with. And then it kind of morphed into, well, you know what, maybe I should concentrate on kids so that they don't become 50 years old and realize that at 50 years old, all of the things that they could have done up to that point that they never did. So how do I make money? I make money by actually going into schools and going into organizations and teaching bullying seminars and teaching people, one, how to navigate around bullies, using kind of my book as a textbook for that. And then I also go into senior living communities, and I do clown programs where I'll either do like a clown fitness program, I'll do like a speaking engagement there, or some senior living communities will just hire me to come in and clown with their dementia patients and just kind of do what I can to kind of spark their interest. And then the money that I make from that is what I use to go on the trips to other countries, because those are self-funded trips. We're not paid as clowns to go to like Russia and Morocco. And so those trips can get very expensive. So I just use the money that I make from the bullying seminars and from going to the senior living communities. I use that money to kind of fund the humanitarian portion of it.
Yeah. Do you stay pretty local as far as your seminars and going into these places like the nursing homes and whatnot, or do you travel around the states a little bit?
Oh, I would love to travel more. Like I said, for right now, I have been fairly centralized here in Arizona. But yeah, I would definitely travel to anybody who wants one. Give me a call. Hello. you know, it's kind of like, you know, you start local and work your way out. But yeah, you know, I have the experience as far as traveling since I did stand up for so many years, and I was always traveling around the country. So that's kind of the dream with this, is to actually expand it to the point where I am traveling most days of the year somewhere. But yeah, I have been kind of focused. I kind of see a need even right here in Arizona, because the state and the state of the union is in the state that it's in. So I kind of can get a lot of work right here. But I definitely like to travel and I like to see new people. So I definitely want to expand that out.
Did you give up on stand up altogether, or do you still do that every now and then?
As a matter of fact, now that you brought it up, once I became a clown, I thought, you know, I wonder what it would be like to do stand up as a clown. And so there is a local comedy club that I have been going to, and I probably go there maybe 3 or 4 times a year. And I actually do the full makeup, and I actually do a whole stand-up act centered around the clown, kind of like, you know, when most people have a midlife crisis, you know, they buy a really expensive car, they date somebody 35 years younger than them. I became a clown, and I kind of based the whole act around becoming a clown at like 50, you know. And how different. So, and then actually,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And actually, it was, I found that actually, this goes better than my previous act did. I should have done this a long time ago. Who knows? I may go back and do some more stand up. I haven't done a lot, maybe about 10 shows, maybe I've done so far as a clown.
So, when you're visiting these schools and stuff, are you interacting pretty heavily with the children and kind of doing a little bit of a stand up routine? Because I imagine you want to be funny, right? You're a clown and you're with these kids.
Absolutely.
So, is that, you know, are you just pushing a centralized message and interacting with them, or are you more standing at a podium on the stage and talking to them?
It's very interactive. I actually have children come up on the stage with me because we act out like different scenarios. So, it's almost kind of like play act. You know, I usually have one kid pretend to be the bully, the other kid pretend to be the person being bullied. And if I can kind of prearrange it, I try to, if I can find like a really tough kid, I make him the one who's being bullied, just to kind of turn the tide. And then have the one who seems like the very meek and the mild one be the one who is the bully, just to kind of get that interaction. And then I talk a lot about body language. So I will have like the students come up and I will have them, you know, kind of put their head down and walk with their head down. And then I have them turn around and then walk with their head up and push their chest out. Just different things to kind of show them different ways that they can kind of thwart a bully by being more observant. And, you know, because I think a lot of times bullies are attracted to people who are, one, not paying attention, and two, people who are kind of mousy and into themselves and not really paying attention to their surroundings, always on their phone or reading a book. The bully just, you know, will go up and just push them into a locker. So it's kind of like a lot of physicality. And so it's a lot of audience interaction.
I think that's one place that I was pretty lucky was you know, I don't think anyone is immune to bullying in school. I think everyone catches a taste of it at some point, and it's just how you handle it and maybe how you're taught to handle it. Because that was one big thing my dad always made sure to push to me was people are going to be bullies. It's just a natural instinct. I mean, you're going to find yourself doing it at some point. I'm sure if both of us crack open all of our past, we're going to find some point where we were both bullies in some way or another. And so it was just being taught how to handle that situation and come out of it with a lot of confidence and be able to still see yourself as important, because that was the big thing that my dad always drove home was be confident in yourself, sell yourself, put your shoulders up, shoulders back when you're walking around, like make sure that you're presentable to other people so that it helps you beyond bullying. It helps you when you get out of school and you're trying to sell yourself to somebody, or you're trying to sell a product or have a good job that requires you to present yourself well. All of those things are life lessons that just to me, they pour into so many things beyond just bullying, but absolutely it always comes back down to that first central thing. And I love that that's the message you're spreading, is like to push yourself up, make yourself look better, basically, like you have that confidence, even if you're not feeling that inside, present it to them outside.
And I let them know, and I'm like, you might feel really silly at first because this is so not your typical demeanor. To you it looks silly, but to somebody else who doesn't know you, they don't know any different. So to them, it looks perfectly natural. And you know, something I heard years ago, I heard it, but actually probably maybe now 7 or 8 years ago. And I'm like, man, I wish I heard this whenever I was a kid. But I actually heard a television preacher say, you know, and she was really mainly talking about the devil, but I kind of took this almost from like a bullying perspective too, was that people might have more power than you. So your bully might have more power physically over you, but they don't have the authority to use that power unless you give it to them. And so I was like, oh, wow, that makes sense. So, and you give the bully power by, you know, not saying anything, not standing up for yourself. And so just by allowing that to happen and not saying anything, you're giving them the authority to do that. And at any moment, you can take that authority back. And so I'm like, man, if I had heard that like a long time ago, things might have been completely different. I don't know that I'd be a clown today. I don't know what I would be, but it might have been a completely whole different trajectory on my life. And so like the sooner I can get that message out to people, and hopefully they don't have to spend 50 years, you know, in this wasteland of time, wasting their life when they could be doing what they really, really want to be doing. So that's kind of don't do what I did kind of thing, you know, do as I say, you know.
You know what, though? I think honestly, and I heard a really good saying for this the other day, and unfortunately, I can't remember it right this second, but it's basically you have to go through all of these things in order to get to where you are, to have that understanding. Like, how good of a clown would you be right now if you didn't have your past to fuel what you're doing right now, you know? And I hate that it has to be that way sometimes, because like you said, God, it'd be so much better in your mind if you could have done something totally different with your life because you had what you would equivocate to a better life. But for me, it took me a long time to learn that everything happens for a reason. And sometimes the crappiest things I've gone through in my life, I come out better on the other side of it. And I'm like, well, as much as I would have liked to have not gone through that, I sure am glad that I did, because it made me who I am today. And it's like, how can you deal with these children and truly get this message across if it wasn't something, a fire that you had to walk through and something you had to deal with personally?
Yeah. And actually that was, speaking of that, that's kind of something that I kind of went through mentally. Cause you know, everybody says, well, how can you write a book on bullying and how can you do seminars on bullying? You're not a psychologist. And I'm like, no, I'm not a psychologist, but the psychologist didn't go through all the things that I went through. I went through it. So, and probably years ago, if this had happened to me, you know, if I'd written the book 10 years ago and somebody said that, I would have folded and I'd have been like, oh yeah, you're right. I'm not a psychologist. Who am I to, now I've been through it and I'm like, you know what? I would much rather hear from somebody who's actually gone through it than somebody who just read about it in a book. And so I now am able to pivot to the point where I'm like, you know what? I have a story to tell and I'm still here. I haven't killed anybody. You know what I mean? So it's like, I have persevered despite what has happened to me in my past. And so now I can parlay this information and all this, all the skills and the tactics that I learned growing up, I can actually give that to someone else and hopefully make somebody else's life better in the process.
So did you, kind of pivoting back to the whole Patch Adams thing, because of course, yeah, there's a movie made after him. One of the greatest actors of all time and greatest comedians of all time played him. I mean, it's a huge deal that you got to even be near him. Did you get to meet him, talk to him, and kind of learn from him? Or was it kind of a distant thing because there were so many of y'all?
Oh, you know, I'll be honest, on the first trip, the one to Russia, it was more my, a lot of, he'll interact with anybody. I mean, yeah, he's on the bus with us and everywhere we go, we sit with a different clown. So, I mean, there was a time where we were on the bus and he sat right next to me and we carried on the conversation the whole trip. And so I didn't have as much interaction, but that was probably about the only interaction I had with him in Russia. When we recently went to Morocco, we were on the same flight. We were on the same flight home. We clowned around in the airport. I don't know if you can see this little picture right here. This is Patch Adams right here on my wall. And that's me from Morocco. And so, yeah, I did a full-on interview with them. And actually I write for a clown called Just for Clowns magazine. And so, yeah, I actually had a lot of interaction with them on that trip. And then recently when we just went to Mexico, I had a lot of interaction with them. Now that I kind of have broken the ice from the first trip, it's easier for me just to walk up to him now and just go, "Hey, Pat," you know. But yeah, it was kind of a little nerve-wracking the very first trip. Plus, I was a new clown. A lot of the clowns had already been on previous trips. And so again, you know, from that bullied mentality that I had, I just kind of kept to myself a lot on that trip and just kind of looked around and kind of took it all in and trying to figure out stuff. And it was very difficult. You know, it was not a lot of clowns, especially brand new clowns. It's a very tough prospect to take somebody who kind of lives their life virtually invisible like I did. You know, I mean, I could probably walk into a restaurant. There have been times I've walked into a restaurant, people forgot to wait on me. So they actually just don't see me, or, you know. And so when I went from that to Russia and everybody saw us everywhere we went because we were dressed the way we were dressed, it was quite the contrast, and it was really kind of jarring to your psyche. It was like, you know, sometimes you like to just slink away, and all of a sudden these strangers are coming up to you and wanting your photo and wanting you to do crazy things in the photos. And so it really was kind of like a career. I don't know what way. It was just very, very odd. And so at the very end of the first week, a lot of us broke down. We're just like, this is a lot to take in. Not only are we clowning, but you know, we can't even go out to a restaurant and eat without people all clamoring around our table and wanting to do something with us. And so now I've gotten so used to that. I mean, I'll wear this costume to Walmart if I need to go buy something while I'm on the way to somewhere, or I'll pump gas this way. You know, now I don't care. I mean, I'm so used to it. And now it's really funny because even when I'm not dressed like a clown, I'll be waving at people and making faces. And then I think they think that I'm a mental case. I just forget that. I think I just forget that I'm not in costume, you know, because I'm so used to being in costume. So it's just amazing how quickly that turned around, and I was able to kind of embrace everybody kind of looking at me.
Yeah. So do you think people kind of, I don't know, I guess, relate to you more now when you're in that clown thing, because it's kind of well known what clowns are there for as far as entertainment and education and that kind of thing? Or do you think you still get quite a few weird looks or quite a few people that are just kind of like, this is too weird for me?
Honestly, I find more people embrace it than are weird or freaked out. You know, I know there's a lot of people who say they're afraid of clowns, but I do find that most people will embrace it more than they are scared. Now, when we did go to an orphanage in Morocco, there were some very small children there who actually went to the orphanage during COVID. So the only people that they saw were the other kids, and they saw their teachers or the people taking care of them. So when we all first walked in and there's, you know, 30 clowns, all red noses and makeup and balloons, you know, it kind of freaked the little kids out. I mean, they were like 2 or 3 years old. And so we just kind of did a little bit of damage control. We started playing with the kids who came around us. And then when they saw, hey, wait a minute, they're all playing and we're over here crying. Let's fix this. You know, they quickly kind of changed their tune, and they really kind of came around and saw us. But yeah, for the most part, I find that most people want to interact with us, and they want to be seen around us, and they want to get their photos and all that kind of stuff. So I feel that we're embraced more than we are ostracized, as you know.
Right. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, as a firefighter, we go to schools. We do these little educational seminars too, where we're showing people around the fire truck, our gear, that kind of stuff. And when we get dressed up in that full gear, there are plenty of times where there's a few kids in that class that are going to cry and they don't like it. So, you know, firefighters, clowns, I guess it doesn't matter. When these kids are seeing something new, they just freak out about it. Sometimes it happens.
A lot of times they don't ever witness that in their daily life. You know, they see what firefighters are like on television. They see what clowns are like on TV and in movies, and they never really have that one-on-one interaction in real life. So I suppose it could be kind of, you know, something that kind of freaks them out to begin with.
For sure. Now, are you totally 100% committed just to the seminars, educational bit of it, or do you do anything for parties, corporate events, anything like that?
I do corporate events. The only thing I don't do birthday parties. That's just not in my, that's not my wheelhouse. That's not something that I feel comfortable doing. But like, I had no problem doing, like, you know, keynotes as a clown and things like that, and actually doing some like corporate party stuff. I find it just as really more fun in some ways to clown for adults, because I think a lot of adults have forgotten how to laugh and forgotten how to have fun. And so it's just kind of nice to go in there and reintroduce fun to them. I mean, it's amazing. Even like in the senior communities, I have these little rubber chickens that I flip, and they're just like a little slingshot. And I took them into a senior living community, and I don't know, you would have thought that there was like the best thing since sliced bread. I mean, these people loved the little chickens. And I mean, I'd be in the middle of doing a speech and they would still be flinging them while I'm in the middle of a speech. But it's just really great to get people to kind of connect with that side of themselves again, that they've forgotten. And you know, we went into a couple places in Mexico when we were just there. We went into a women's prison, so that was kind of a little different. It was a women's prison, women with children, women who, and the way that prison operated was they were allowed to have their children with them from the time that the child was born until they were 6 years old. And so we went there on visitation day, where their families were visiting. And so we kind of interacted with them. And then in the prison yard, you could see like the cells, there was like little holes in the wall on the prison yard. So the people who were not allowed to come out because they were bad or misbehaved that particular week and they didn't get their visitation, they were kind of behind these walls and had like these little, kind of like little peepholes like you would see on a ship. I mean, they just had a bunch of those to look out. And so, you know, one of them wanted a balloon and I didn't know how to get a balloon up there, but I had these little chicken flingers. And so I started flipping those flingers through the little hole. And, you know, it's like, you know, my whole point is I'm supposed to reach everybody that I can reach. So if it happens to be somebody, again, that I'm not face to face with exactly, I still continue to interact with the people behind the wall. We also went to a refugee center where people from other countries were there seeking asylum or trying to find a better life for themselves. So we went in and we clowned with people from Afghanistan and other countries just to kind of bring a little bit of joy to them. And so that's really what I enjoyed doing. But again, you know, that doesn't pay. You can't charge people for that kind of thing. And so it's just you find the other ways of clowning that will bring the money in, that allows you to do the traveling and go to those different places and reach the different people.
Yeah. Seems like you need a 501c3.
And actually, now that you say that, I am working on that. I'm working on a 501c3 called Clowns on a Mission. And so that's what I'm in the process of doing, is getting that set up. so that I can take donations, and that way people say, hey, we would love for you to come to Guam or wherever, that, you know, we would try to get donations for people to donate to the 501c3 that could help fund those trips as well. So that is what I'm in the process of working on at the moment.
Yeah, that'd be amazing, because, you know, the money you make off of the book, the money you make off of going and doing these seminars, that money should be something that goes to pay your bills and make your living and allow you to be comfortable. And the 501c3 should totally be there to collect all of that money from donors to do exactly what you're trying to do with your mission, if you will, because I love it. I think it's a great mission, and I think it is definitely something that needs to be done. We have people in this world that are just, they're unseen, maybe not because of bullying, but because they're in a bad position that they've put themselves in, a bad position that someone else has put themselves in, and it's just causing them to have to go through life with no joy or little to no joy. And then, you know, in steps the clown, which just instantly, the second you see it, whether you're ridiculing it in your mind or you're connecting with it, you're still laughing, you're still enjoying yourself. And I would, you know, I would dare say that that's all that matters to you, is that at least somebody's laughing, whether they're laughing at you or with you, they're enjoying themselves for the moment.
Well, and you know, and it sounds like it's a selfish thing to say, but what I found out when I went to Russia, I was still harboring the fact that my father had passed away. I was still kind of reconciling this whole fact that I was bullied as a kid and I was bullied as an adult, and I was all. And when I was focused for 14 straight days of bringing joy to other people, I mean, you can't be happy and mad or happy and sad at the same time. So after the end of that 14 days, I came home and all of the grief that I had, all of the anger that I had, all of that was gone. And that's what allowed me to sit down and write the book and kind of reconcile the fact that I was bullied. And then actually during that time, the kid who bullied me in school wrote me a letter. He was going through a 12-step program and he had to make amends. And so I actually carried on a conversation with the bully via Facebook. And I actually have the letter that he wrote me and some of the interactions in the book, because I was asking, you know, why did you do this and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of gave a different perspective to the book, as far as, you know, it kind of gave it from the bully's perspective too. Why does a bully bully? And that kind of shed some light, and I was just able to reconcile all of that stuff. Patch Adams, he takes Vietnam vets who have post-traumatic stress. He takes them on clown tours. And he actually, if you ever get a chance on Facebook or on YouTube, he's got a movie on there called Clown Vets that you can watch. And it shows what we do on the clown tours. And it shows taking like these really tough guys who, I'm not going to wear makeup and I'm not wearing a tutu. And, you know, and then 10 minutes later, there they are with makeup and a tutu on going into a children's burn unit or something like that. So it's just amazing. The power that the clowning has, not only on the people that you clown for, but the power and the change that it has with inside you as a person as well.
Yeah. So if we want to go find out more information, you know, subscribe somewhere so we can find out when you launch that 501c3, buy the book, book you for a seminar, anything like that. How do I get in connection with you?
The easiest way is through my website at bullseyeoftheclown.com. And then if you're interested in the 501c3 that we're working on, I actually do have a website up for that called clownsonamission.com. You can go to either one of those. And then also if you want to just go to clownsonamission.com just to see photos from some of the clown trips that we've gone on. I do have photos up there from some of the different clown trips that we've gone on. I'm getting ready to put the photos up that I took while we were in Mexico. So I will have some of those up very shortly as well. But yeah, I'm working on that. So clownsonamission.com, bullseyeoftheclown.com, or you can just go to amazon.com and look for Bullseye on Bullying and order the book right off of Amazon.
Yeah. Are you on social media at all, or YouTube, anything like that?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram as bullseye_clown. I'm on Facebook. I think the Facebook is Bullseye the Clown. There's another Bullseye the Clown who's not as cute as I am. He's on there. So you'll find me very quickly. I tend to post quite a bit. And you can also find me on Facebook as Brian Lee as well. And usually all my pictures have my clown picture on there, my clown face. So I don't do Twitter. One thing we didn't talk about, you know, back in our days when I was growing up, and probably when you were growing up as well, we didn't have social media. So we didn't have the cyberbullying that we have mm-hmm. today. And I have just found from personal experience that probably the worst platform for bullying is Twitter. So I've just made a pact with myself. I don't use Twitter just because I don't find it, beneficial. I like the fact, like with Facebook and Instagram, I can delete people. I don't have to accept everybody who wants to become a friend, that kind of thing. I feel like I have more control over who friends me and what kind of friends that I have on those two platforms. Twitter, anybody who wants to click on your thing can just click. And so I personally just don't like that platform as a whole. And I always suggest, you know, if people are being bullied on Twitter, to get off of that and go to one of the other platforms where you can control it a little bit better.
Well, if there is one message you could get out to everybody, the thing that you're trying to tell people one at a time, but right now you could blast it to the whole world, what do you think it would be that you'd want to say?
I said it earlier, and I will definitely repeat this. Nobody has the authority to bully you unless you give it to them. And you give it to them by not saying anything, by allowing them to do it. And you can take back that authority at any time. You do not have to stay in that particular position. You can get out of that situation at any time. I guess that would be the overall message that I would like to give to them, is that, you know, you have the power to control your own destiny. For many years, I didn't think I had that. And so that's why I'm a clown.
I mean, I love it. It's a purpose. It's a why behind what you do, what you do. And that's the whole reason this show exists, is to get down to that. So if you don't have anything else you want to share out there to the world, man, I really just have to thank you for coming on this show and for giving me, you know, 45 minutes of your time. I truly appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. I always enjoy being the first clown on anybody's on anybody's show. So am I the first clown on your show?
Yes, you are the very first clown. We have never had one on this show before. And we're, you know, at the time of recording this, we have like 75 episodes released, something like that. And I've got probably about 30 more waiting to be edited and released. So this is, you know, 100 shows deep that we've recorded, and we've never had a clown on. This is a first. And I told you, whenever we were rescheduling this thing and trying to get it recorded, this was one I was excited for. So I was truly happy to be a part of this show today. And I'm excited to have you on here, and I can't wait to release this one for everybody to listen to.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. And listeners, as always, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Small Business Origins. We couldn't do this thing without you. Whether you're liking the show, you're commenting on the show, reviewing it, subscribing to it, whatever it is you do, all of that stuff helps us. And it helps us to connect with people like Bullseye the Clown and get their story out there and learn a little bit more about them than you do just by reading their websites or checking out what they're doing at other places. This is a show that our meaning is to truly get down to the why behind what these entrepreneurs do, and telling the origin story of how they got to where they are now. So we just thank you for tuning in every single week for another episode, and we will see you on the next week. And as always, stay beefy, my friends.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Small Business Origins.
I love an origin story.
If you like what you just heard, leave us a review, subscribe, and share with a friend.
Guys, check this out.
They're gonna love it. You're gonna love it.